We want our children to have the best chance to live fulfilling lives. But can you keep up with all the books and scientific research on parenting and fit the information into your own philosophy on how to raise kids? Welcome to Your Parenting Mojo, the podcast that does the work for you by investigating and examining respectful, research-based parenting tools to help kids thrive. Now, welcome your host, Jen Lumenlon.
Hello and welcome to Your Parenting Mojo. We have a fabulous guest lined up today, and we're going to talk about sex. No, not sex for you. I assume you've probably figured that part out already by now, especially since you're listening to a podcast for parents, but about your children and sex. So I was scrolling down my Facebook feed recently when I saw a post in a parenting group saying, "My two-year-old daughter seems to have a special relationship, quote-unquote, with her rocking horse. Is she masturbating?" And I thought to myself, whoa, two-year-olds masturbate? I got to do an episode on this. So I looked around to see who's writing about this, and I found Salima Noon, who has a master's degree in sexual health education and has been teaching the fields of sexual health, assertiveness, internet safety, healthy relationships, and body image for a decade now. She co-wrote the recent books Talk Sex Today, What Kids Need to Know and How Adults Can Teach Them, which is absolutely chock full of information on how to talk with children of all ages about sex. And the book is so awesome that I knew I had to invite her on the show to help us understand what we should consider discussing with our toddlers and preschoolers about sex and sexuality and why we should do this as well. Welcome, Salima.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So can you tell us a bit about why you think we should start talking even with really young children about sexuality? You know, what's our overall goal here? Why are we doing this?
Well, the goal is to keep our kids educated and therefore protected and safe. I tell parents that there are three main reasons why we need to start talking to our children early about sexual health, and they all have to do with protection and prevention. The first one is that young children are easiest to teach because they haven't learned yet that sexual health is still a taboo subject in our society. So, for example, you know, when we explain to even young children how babies are made or what their body parts are called using scientific language, they're excited to learn about that stuff. They don't have any emotional baggage around the topic, just like, you know, older children and teenagers and even some adults have. So they're really curious body scientists, we call them, and they're excited to learn anything they can about the topic. By the time they get to grade 4 or 5, however, we call these people the gross me outers because now they've learned they should be totally disgusted by anything to do with sex or sexual health or bodies, you know? So the whole idea is for parents to teach their kids early, even before questions start coming up, to capitalize on their natural curiosity and matter-of-fact nature in learning the information. The second reason why we as parents need to start talking about sexual health with our young children as early as possible is that our kids are exposed to so much to do with sexuality at younger and younger ages, even as toddlers, believe it or not. And so we always need to stay one step ahead of the game with accurate information so that our kids know how to interpret what they hear, they can think critically about it, and if they hear something that doesn't make sense to them or is upsetting or disturbing to them even, they can come and ask us about it. We as parents want to be our kids' number one source of sexual health information. And the third reason why we need to start talking from an early age, I think, is most important. And that is that studies from all over the world consistently show us that children who are educated about healthy bodies and healthy sexuality are protected from child sexual abuse. Children need information to keep themselves out of exploitative situations. And so when parents ask me, you know, when do I start teaching? Well, I half jokingly tell them the day your child is born by using technical terminology, yeah. You know? They can learn words like vagina and vulva just as easily as they learn any other word. You know, they're like little sponges. And we have to be accurate too. For example, when a young child is in the bath, we're not washing the vagina. The vagina does not need to be washed. It's an opening. But what needs to be washed is the vulva. Mm-hmm. And even seemingly small distinctions like this are important because if a child is abused and needs to report to a parent or in a court setting, God forbid, they need to have appropriate vocabulary so they can be very clear in exactly what they're trying to express. Yeah. You know, lots of research has been done talking to child predators, and what they tell us is that they spend a lot of time grooming their victims. Most of it abuse themselves. They know exactly what to look for. And what they say time and time again is that a child who is educated and knowledgeable and aware about sexual health at any age has probably been taught by a parent or another reliable adult and has also been taught to report should something exploitative happen. On the other hand, a child who doesn't know anything, doesn't have the vocabulary, doesn't have that awareness, probably hasn't been taught either and won't report, or at least will be less likely to report, and therefore is an easier target. Mm. So teaching our kids, even as toddlers, using technical terminology, and as they reach the preschool years, answering questions as they come up, is really key from a safety perspective.
Yeah. We're not going to dig too deep in the safety perspective, but so before we move on, I just wanted to mention something. I can't remember if I heard this in your book or read it somewhere else, but I remember reading about a toddler who had been taught to call their genitalia a cookie jar, and that they had been abused and had been trying to tell their teacher at school, you know, somebody's touching my cookie jar, and the teachers had no idea what was going on, and then the kid kept talking about it and talking about it, finally called the parent, and then figured out what was going on. And this poor child had been trying to communicate this for weeks and couldn't do it because they didn't have the language to tell.
Mm-hmm. And that is a true story that a parent told me years ago. Yeah. It just highlights the importance of, you know, being clear with our kids and teaching technical terminology from day one.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll sort of keep that in our minds as an important reason why we should do this, but we're going to dig more into the, you know, the what children learn about sex and sexuality and how we can talk to them about it more in this show. Mm-hmm. So let's jump ahead a little bit to school age. What do children learn about sex in school? Because it seems to me as though we sort of reduce this huge, amazing topic of sex and sexuality to thou shalt not have sex before marriage because it's wrong, and if thou does, thou'd better not get pregnant or get an STI.
Right.
How does that happen?
You know, much of what kids learn in school-based sexual health education is fear-based and problem-focused, especially in the United States, I have to say. We here in Canada are a lot more progressive and a lot more positive in how we address it. However, we still have a long way to go. Mm. I can't speak to what the curriculum is in each area of California, for example, because it really does, I'm guessing it's much like here in Canada, where what our kids learn, even in elementary school, about sexual health varies from school to school and even class to class, depending on who the teacher is. What I can tell you is that here in Canada, we do have a mandated curriculum for kids kindergarten to grade 10 in all schools. Mm-hmm. But what actually happens in the classroom is hit and miss because our teachers are not given adequate support. They're not given good resources. They may not have time and they may simply not feel comfortable teaching it. And there's no monitoring of it. And so it really is, we can't be sure of what our kids are learning. Here in Canada, the bulk of the curriculum in the primary years, so kindergarten to grade 3, centers around abuse prevention. Private parts on the body, really teaching consent. The idea that all kids are the boss of their bodies, they say who goes on them and who does not. And of course, this is an important message, of course, when it comes to safety. But what our curriculum does not cover and what needs to be covered is basic reproduction and anatomy information. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times when I'm teaching grade 1, for example, so these are 6-year-olds, mm-hmm. how many times kids ask me what the word sexy means. Because they hear about it on commercials, they hear about it in music, they see it on, right now we have a bus ad campaign for Extra gum, and it says bad breath isn't sexy. So I've got kids every week asking me about that and what it means.
And what do you tell them?
Well, it really depends on the context in which they're asking me. Mm-hmm. So a lot of kids are singing Hey Sexy Lady in songs, for example, and they really have no idea what the word means. Yeah. Just last week, a grade 1 girl came up to me and said, hey, I know what the word sexy means. And I said, oh yeah, what does it mean? She said, it means cool. And then another girl interrupted and she said, no, it doesn't mean cool. It means that you're healthy and you make good choices about what you put in your body. So between what parents are telling them and what they're interpreting for themselves, there's all kinds of miscommunication and confusion. Mm. What we want kids to know, for example, about the word sexy is that because sex is only for grownups, it wouldn't be appropriate for kids to use this word or even to sing it in a song. So when it comes up in your favorite song, maybe instead of singing, "Hey, sexy lady," you could sing, "Hey, funny lady," or "Hey, happy lady," or, you know, "Hey, independent lady." I usually lose them when I suggest that. But, you know, the idea is just to sub out the word. And so they can still enjoy and sing their song. Mm-hmm. But because sex is for grownups only, it wouldn't be appropriate. In a literal sense, I explain to kids that to say that someone is sexy means that you want to have sex with them. And again, because sex is only for grownups, not appropriate. It's not a bad word. Mm-hmm. It's just not a word that kids should use. Yeah. So the word sexy is one example of how much our kids are exposed to, mostly through media, at an early age. You know, I'm also reminded of a time recently where I was in a kindergarten class. And as we're talking about the baby growing inside the uterus, one of the girls blurts out, "Oh, yeah. And you know what else, Salima? Sometimes grownups have sex when they're drunk." So who knows where she got that from? Yeah. My guess is that she overheard some adults talking, mm-hmm. or maybe she saw something on a movie. Who knows, right? But yeah. this is proof that our kids are exposed to so much more than we think, mm-hmm. at such younger ages than we think. And so we have to be willing as parents to have those open conversations with them and help them make sense of what's around them.
Yeah, because especially in the US, they're not getting that in school. You know, knowing that you're Canadian, I did a bit of background research on, you know, what is the state of sex education in the US, and I'm English and so didn't have any sex education here. And I found that 37 U.S. states require that information on abstinence be provided. 26 states require that abstinence be stressed. And in Utah, abstinence has to be the dominant message given to students. Educators in Utah aren't even allowed to discuss, and I'm going to quote this, the intricacies of intercourse, sexual stimulation, or erotic behavior, the advocacy of homosexuality, the advocacy or encouragement of the use of contraceptive methods or devices, or the advocacy of sexual activity outside marriage, end quote. So that's sort of the worst of that.
I hear that, Jen, and I want to cry.
Yeah, yeah. But there are places that are getting better. You know, Chicago and Broward County have now some form of sex education in all grades, starting in kindergarten. But yeah, that's not the norm by any stretch.
It makes me so sad because even within those curriculums, we're still sending the message to kids that sex is a bad thing. Mm-hmm. We're focusing on the negative. We're focusing on the problems, mm-hmm. the what ifs. Don't do this because you could get this. Mm-hmm. This could happen to you. You know, it's just ridiculous. And this negative focus on sexuality is harming our kids. It really is. The research for so many years now shows us so overwhelmingly that teaching kids to just say no, mm-hmm. you know, that abstinence only or even abstinence focused education doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is say, yeah, you know, in most circumstances between two consenting adults in a healthy relationship, sex is a great thing. Sex is a way that people reproduce, but it's also a way that people show love and affection for one another. And guess what? It feels good. Mother Nature makes it feel good because if it felt horrible, then no one would do it. And most of us wouldn't be there, be here rather. Mm-hmm. So sex in most circumstances is a great thing. Now, it comes with some very adult, sometimes serious responsibilities, which is why we want you to gather all of the information you need before you make decisions about sex. But when you make decisions that are based on good information and based on your own personal values and beliefs, that's when sex can be a really positive part of your life. And that's what we want for you.
Mm. So other countries must do this, you know, pretty differently from us, right? Does education in other places focus less on abstinence and risk than it does here?
Yeah, it does. Especially in the Scandinavian countries. I mean, mm-hmm. for years and years and years, they've been providing students with comprehensive sexual health education. And the results of that, the benefits of that are seen in their statistics. I mean, their teenage pregnancy rate is much lower than ours here in North America. Their STI rates, especially among young adults, are much lower than ours. I mean, it just goes on and on. And most importantly, kids there grow up with just an openness and such a healthy attitude towards sex and sexuality. It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay, so let's go back to the kind of core age group that we're talking about here, which is the kind of toddlers and preschoolers. And I'm curious about the signals that parents send about sexuality, even if they don't talk about it very much. You know, I'm thinking of a book that we have, Richard Scarry's book called This Is Me. And it's about a pig, and it moves through the pig's day and the clothes it wears. And there's a 2-page spread of what the pig looks like naked. And all the different parts of the body are called out, you know, the elbows and the wrists. And and between the belly button and the knees, all there is underpants. So what do children learn about our lack of willingness to, you know, just call out what's there?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, even if it's unintentional, the silence on the part of the parent becomes a very strong message to a child that for whatever reason, we don't talk about these body parts or my parents don't want to teach me about this. So again, we need to be open. And the good news is there are some amazing children's books aimed at toddlers that don't skip over those private areas. One that comes to mind right away is by the author of the Arthur books. What's the Big Secret is a great book for parents to read with their toddlers. And it gives such lighthearted yet scientific information. And toddlers love it because there's great pictures and it's exciting for them to learn about the body in that format, you know?
Yeah.
So there are great resources for parents, even as young as the toddler age, to read and learn that way.
So when you talk with parents about talking to their really young children at the toddler age, what do the parents say about talking with children about sex? Do many of them do it?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them do it. More and more parents are feeling empowered to give their kids the information that they never got from their own parents growing up. And so to grab a body science book and read with your toddler or preschooler would be a great way to start. Just a few pages before bed every night, like any other bedtime book, you know? And what parents of young children tell me is that it's so much easier than they imagined it to be because their kids let them know when they've had enough. But again, they're little sponges and they enjoy learning about the body, especially if it's done in a fun way, like reading a good book meant for kids their age, you know? So while the idea of it may be daunting, especially for parents who didn't grow up learning from their own parents, once they get down to it, they realize how easy it is, especially with young children. And that's what we want to do. We want to open the doors of communication early so that the topic of sexual health is normalized in our home. And that way, when our kids are, you know, age 10, 11, and 12 and are feeling more discomfort and embarrassment around the topic, it won't be so bad because they've always talked to their parents about it.
Why do they go through that discomfort and embarrassment stage?
Well, our society is sexually immature and they learn from peers and teenagers and adults around them, not to mention the media, that this is something they should be embarrassed talking about. That and all the information starting to make sense to them. Not only that, but they're in puberty. And so they're very self-conscious about their own bodies a lot of times and don't want to talk about it.
So what are some of the common questions and issues that come up with really young children? You know, what kind of questions do the children ask and how do parents answer those questions?
Well, I guess, first of all, maybe I can start with sharing some questions that parents of toddlers ask me. A lot of questions center around nudity in the home from parents with young children. So for example, when should I stop being naked in front of my kids? When should I give my kids privacy when they're changing? And the same thing goes for siblings bathing and showering together or parents bathing or showering with their children. And really the answer to all of those questions is whoever says no rules. There's no age at which nudity in the home should stop. I mean, what we don't want is to create a feeling of shame or guilt around the naked body, right? But it really depends on everyone's comfort level. So as long as everyone in that immediate family is feeling perfectly comfortable with nudity, then there's no reason to stop it. We just need to pay attention to our kids' cues. This is usually the kids who put an end to it. So if a mom, for example, is getting out of the bath and her son walks by the bathroom door and says, "Mom, why do you always have to be naked?" You know, that's a hint that maybe he doesn't want to see you naked so much anymore, right? So we need to pay attention to those cues and respect everyone's boundaries. But as long as everyone is comfortable, there's no reason for it to end.
Okay. And I'm thinking about younger children as well. Maybe the opposite sex parent from the child is less comfortable being naked around that child. But maybe the child, you know, doesn't care or is just curious as to, you know, why do their parts look different from my parts? What do you do in that situation?
Well, again, we want everyone to feel comfortable. So if it is a parent who's not comfortable, that's fine. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and he has a 2.5-year-old, and I had bought him a book called Where Do I Come From to read to his daughter. And so he was telling me that he was reading the book the other night, and it started some really good conversations. She's been asking about why her body looks different than her dad's, and that was all great. And he said, actually, we were in the bath the other night, and then he stopped and said, don't worry, I was wearing my swimsuit. And I said, well, are you uncomfortable bathing with your daughter without a swimsuit? And he said, well, no, I don't care, but I just didn't think it was appropriate. And I said, well, do you think she'd be comfortable with you not wearing a swimsuit in the bath? And he said, yeah, I'm pretty sure. And I said, well, why are you wearing a swimsuit? Because right there, we don't want to send the message, this young girl, that it's not okay for family members to be around each other naked. Mm-hmm. You know, so we need to find that balance between healthy boundaries and being proud of one's body and comfortable with nudity. Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay. So how do things change as the kids get a bit older? I mean, you mentioned the older child saying, you know, do you always have to be naked? What kinds of things do they start asking around the preschool age that is different from kind of the very young toddlers?
Yeah, I think when kids are toddlers, they're still all about noticing the differences, right? Mm-hmm. Why does your body look different than mine?
Yeah.
Mommy, where's your penis? Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And that's just all part of their natural curiosity, learning about their own body and the bodies around them. So we as parents, of course, need to be really open and honest about that and show lots of pictures, of course, in books meant for children, to explain the difference and the uniqueness of everybody. Now, I will say that we need to be careful when we're talking even to young children about saying, for example, boys' bodies look like this and girls' bodies look like that. While that works for the majority of people, it's never too early for kids to understand that, first of all, everyone's body is unique. So, for example, even when I'm working with preschool students, and as a parent, I would address this with my toddler as well. I show a picture, for example, of the male reproductive system. And immediately I say, this is what we usually know to be a boy's body. Before we continue, I just want to let you know that not all boys have bodies that look exactly like this. Everyone's body is unique that way. And someone may have a body that looks like this, but they may not feel like a boy or even call themselves a boy. And that's perfectly fine too. So when parents are talking to their children, even as young as toddlers, we just want to recognize to them that yes, usually boys' bodies look like this and girls' bodies look like that, but there are exceptions to that rule and that's absolutely okay.
Yeah, that actually goes to a question from a parent that I received when I knew I was going to be talking with you. I put out a request for questions and got quite a few. And one parent responded to say that she has a 4-year-old daughter and you know, the woman has been trying to come up with these, you know, very sensitive messages about most boys having penises and most girls having vulvas and vaginas. But she sees that her daughter thinks in very black and white terms and isn't sure how she's processing this. You know, most people have things this way, but some people have things that way kind of language. What's your suggestion on that?
Well, my experience is that kids, even in preschool, get it. They don't even bat an eye. I mean, everything in the world has exceptions. And so the term most is something they're perfectly comfortable with.
Yeah.
So I've never, in all my years of teaching, since I've been saying this, which is a few years now, I've never had a student question me on it.
Okay.
And if a child does question a parent, well, it needs a little bit of explanation. There is a great book for young children called What Makes a Baby by Corey Silverman. And it describes reproduction in completely gender neutral terms. And kids love this book. It's perfectly understandable. And basically what they say is some people have sperm and some people have eggs. And in order to make a baby, you need a sperm and an egg.
No matter where it comes from.
There are different ways that it can come together. And the sperm and the egg can come from different bodies, mm-hmm. but all that matters is the sperm and the egg. Hmm. And kids get it. They love it. So I think we need to be careful not to underestimate what our kids are capable of understanding, you know?
Okay. So let's talk about some of those other questions that came from parents. A lot of them could be grouped within common topics. I'm guessing you probably get many similar kinds of questions from other parents. One mom said that her 2-year-old son has an intact penis, but her husband is circumcised. And so mm-hmm. neither of them are really familiar with intact penises. And her son's pediatrician has told them to clean it. But her son apparently looks really scared and just doesn't want to cooperate whenever they try and do it in the bath. And kind of on the flip side of that, I've read about parents who need to wash a girl's vulva when the girl has been taught about inappropriate touching. And so when the parents try and wash her, the girl says, you know, it's my body. And I say, you can't touch that. So how do you find that balance between making sure that appropriate hygiene is taken care of and mm-hmm. really respecting a child's lack of desire to have their genitals touched by anyone mm-hmm. other than themselves?
Mm-hmm. So it is a fine balance. And absolutely, we need to teach our kids, the concept of consent from mm-hmm. day one, the idea that they say who goes on their body and who does not. Now, with little ones, like toddlers and preschoolers especially, we want to give them concrete examples of what is appropriate behavior versus inappropriate behavior. So it's not this person can touch your body, but this person can't. Mm-hmm. It's if this person is doing this, then it's appropriate. So we give examples. For example, I might say, I know I've just told you that your mouth is a private part, right? But would it be okay for the dentist to look in your mouth? Well, of course, because that's their job, to keep our teeth healthy and clean. And they can't keep our teeth healthy and clean unless they look at them. Or if you went to the doctor because you had a rash on your genitals, would it be reasonable for the doctor to want to have a look? Of course. But if you went to the doctor because you had a sore throat, would they need to pull down your pants? No, that would be inappropriate behavior. So I encourage parents to offer very concrete examples of appropriate and inappropriate behavior that's relevant to their child. Mm. Now, a parent will also include it in these examples, say to their child, you know, I'm your parent and it's my job to keep your body healthy and clean. And what that involves is helping you wash your genitals until you're able to do it by yourself. Mm-hmm. With the foreskin, it's important that boys learn how to pull back the foreskin gently and wash underneath it. And if a boy is really resisting that from a parent, or if, for example, the example you gave, a girl is not wanting her parents to wash her vulva, well, then it's up to the parent to teach them how to do it themselves with supervision. Mm-hmm. So maybe washing the vulva, there's a washcloth and the child has their hand on the washcloth with a parent's hand over top of it to guide the washing. But at least then the child feels empowered and doesn't feel like their body is being, you know, mm-hmm. Violated in any yeah. way. And some kids are more sensitive to that than others.
Mm-hmm. So it might be sort of trying different things then, and over time, maybe the child gets more competent at washing and can do it by themselves. I wouldn't have thought of the one hand over another hand.
and the same thing goes with toileting.
Yeah.
You know, wiping. Mm-hmm. Of course, up to a certain point, parents need to do the wiping mm-hmm. Because kids just may not have the motor skills to do a good job. And again, that goes under the role of keeping your body clean and healthy. That's my job as your parent. Mm-hmm. But as a child gets older, especially if they're voicing a desire to be more independent that way, or a discomfort with a parent helping them toilet, well, then the transition would be your hand goes on the toilet paper, we're wiping, and I'm going to guide your hand mm-hmm. with my hand on top of yours.
Mm. Okay. I want to go back to something you said at the beginning of this, your answer to that question, which was who goes on a person's body? That seems unusual language. Can you tell us why you use that?
A lot of parents ask me why I say who goes on another person's body.
Yeah.
And that's just because we're not just talking about touching. We're talking about a wide range of activities, and it may involve someone putting their body on another person's body. Hmm. So I feel that saying the term go on your body, no one is allowed to go on your body without permission, is just more inclusive in terms of the different kinds of exploitative behavior that someone could experience.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification. And so the other major chunk of questions that I got from parents were about inappropriate touching of genitals. It would be touching of genitals at inappropriate times.
Toddlers are textbooks at that.
Yes. Maybe it's the dinner table when somebody's over for dinner, or, you know, just at some other time that our society would generally say is not an appropriate time for a touching. And so almost without variation, the parents telling me they respond with some, you know, version of "you're welcome to explore your body, but that's something that we do in private and not at the dinner table," which I believe is the kind of thing we want to say to not shame the behavior, but still make it something that is done in private. But the parents are saying that the children just keep right on doing it. So what's the next step in that, you know, progression?
Well, I completely agree. The message is normal, healthy, but private. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great thing that you're exploring your body. We understand that it feels good. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But it's an activity that is so private, even mom and dad can't see it. So if you want to explore your body, you need to go in your bedroom or in your bathroom where no one else is around. And of course, you're not in trouble, but it just is something that you need to be doing when you're alone. A lot of kids, especially at the toddler stage, they masturbate without even realizing it because it's a comforting thing. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many preschool teachers as well come to me and say, you know, so-and-so got their hand down their pants during circle time. I don't know how to get them to stop, you know? But we need to be firm with this message and gentle, but firm. A lot of parents and teachers tell me that picking a key word is helpful. So for example, you know, even a key phrase, hands on your lap, would help a teacher explain to a child masturbating during circle time that they need to refocus. And sometimes it just takes a little, you know, jolt of them realizing, oh yeah, right. I'm doing this. I forgot. Mm-hmm. It's not appropriate right now, you know? But if a child is consistently masturbating at inappropriate times, then I think a parent would need to eventually decide when they should attach consequences to it. Mm-hmm. And again, this comes down to safety, because we don't want a child with a babysitter, for example, watching TV with their hands down their pants. And then for a babysitter to use this as an invitation rather, for exploitation. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's how you do it. Do you want to see how I do it?
Mm. Yeah.
It's sickening, but it can happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So we need to be very gentle, but firm with the message that masturbation is normal, healthy, but private. And, you know, what I found is that toddlers and preschoolers and elementary aged kids go through phases where they're just more sensual than other times, and they'll masturbate a lot and then they won't do it. And then they'll masturbate a lot again, and then they won't do it. It really, and then some kids are just more sensual than others. Some kids don't feel the urge to masturbate at all. And of course, that's fine too. But parents just need to kind of roll with it and keep repeating that gentle but firm message.
Okay. And is it kind of an escorting, you know, firm hand on the back to the bedroom kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But if a parent can figure out a key word with their child, then it avoids the embarrassment or shame of having to remind a child when they've got guests over for dinner that it's not an appropriate time.
Yeah. Okay. So figuring out your child.
Honey, do you need to go to the bathroom?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then other people around wouldn't quite understand anything beyond that, right?
Yeah. Okay. Great. Thanks for that.
Mm-hmm.
So as we sort of think about the overarching issues here, when I was doing background reading for this conversation, most of the sources that I looked at had this idea of education on sexuality needing to be developmentally appropriate. And I'm guessing that in a culture where education on sexuality is not the norm, that could be used as a, well, they're not developmentally ready for it yet, kind of way. So, but if we're thinking about it, you know, we really want to make sure that we're talking about this as early as we can and as early as we should be doing, but not more information than we can or should be doing. You know, how do we know if what you're telling a child is developmentally appropriate?
Oh, they'll let you know. They'll let you know what they're interested in, what they understand. They'll walk away when they've had enough.
Huh.
But I think we underestimate what kids are capable of understanding and also what they've already been exposed to. Mm-hmm. The reality is kids as young as 10 and 11 have been exposed to pornography. Mm-hmm. Online. It is so accessible. Mm. Kids even younger than that are exposed to pornography by accident while searching terms, you know, for projects they're doing at school.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes me really sad about that is that their first exposure to sexuality can often be so negative and disturbing. Mm. We don't want that for them. We want them to understand, first of all, what a great thing sex can be in a person's life. And then when they get exposed to maybe some not so positive aspects of sexuality, they won't be traumatized. Mm-hmm. So it's not learning about sexuality and sex that is traumatizing in any way for kids. It's what they see without the information behind it, you know? So we do have to recognize that kids are exposed to more and more at younger and younger ages. They are hypersexualized at younger and younger ages. And we need to stay one step ahead of the game so they can think critically about what they're exposed to. And we never know when that's going to be, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I have grade sixes, so 11-year-olds asking me, can women have a bunch of orgasms in a row? Well, I wonder where they're getting that from. Because 5 years ago, they were asking me, what is an orgasm?
And I'm guessing it's not right? sex education from the parents that is no. the source of that information.
No. Or they're asking me, why do women always scream when they have sex? Uh-huh. So that's, you know, pornography, of course, is one source of yeah. information. But music videos on YouTube, shows you're seeing on TV. I mean, I think even shows on the Family Channel are mm-hmm. questionable in terms of adult content and storylines and sense of humor. Mm-hmm. So we need to face the facts that our kids are exposed to more and more than we ever were exposed to. Mm-hmm. I mean, for us, I think the raciest it got was Love Boat and Fantasy Island on a Saturday night, right? But now our kids are exposed to so much more at any times of the day on their devices. Mm. They're looking up YouTube clips on the playground at recess.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is impossible for parents to monitor everything they come across, which is why if we can open the doors of communication about this stuff in toddlerhood and preschool with our kids, then maybe our 10-year-old will come home after school and over dinner share with us what so-and-so showed them on the playground that day. And those are the conversations we want to have the opportunity to speak about with our kids. Mm-hmm. Now, if parents are asked a question and it's just not a good time or they have no clue what to say, which is totally understandable, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know what? I'm so glad you asked me about that. Thank you for being brave enough to bring it up. We're going to talk about it and I'm going to think about how best to answer your question. Let's talk about it before bed or when our guests leave or when we get out of the grocery store, whenever's a better time. Mm-hmm. But questions like that or situations that kids bring up to us over the dinner table are such amazing opportunities to give little snippets of information. And it's not about sitting your child down for 2 hours at a time and spilling everything you know on a given topic. Often, a couple sentences does the trick. But just in the willingness to be honest and the effort to answer the question scientifically send such a positive message to our kids that we want them to come to us. We want to be our kids' number one source of sexual health information.
Yeah. And that, can you give me a minute to think about it? Or, you know, I'll answer your question later. Seems like an awesome tool. It's not like I have to come up with some, you know, appropriate response on the spot to answer their question, right?
And of course, it's not, you know, we're not giving permission to parents to just blow it off and hope it never comes up again.
Yeah. You have to come back to it and actually answer the question if you say you're going
through.
To. Okay.
Yeah. Because again, if you don't, mm-hmm. well then maybe your child's not going to ask you their next question because they didn't get an answer anyway. Mm-hmm. Or if you give them a dishonest answer, you're not a credible source of information. I remember years ago, a friend of mine called me, her daughter was in grade 4 at the time and they were driving to school that morning and listening to the radio, and seemingly out of the blue, her daughter said, "Mom, what's a hoe?" Mm-hmm. My friend understandably did not know what to say, nor did she feel like getting into it at the time. So she just very calmly replied, "Well, a hoe is a gardening tool." Mm-hmm. When really her
Which
daughter was referring to the short form of the word whore. Mm-hmm. Now, my guess is that her daughter learned what a hoe really is on the playground at recess that day, because if she was asking about it, then surely her friends were asking about it. And at least one of their brave parents would have told them the truth. Uh-huh. But now my friend's daughter is faced with the fact that her mom fibbed. Mm-hmm. And so I worry that she may not come back with her next question. Now, luckily my friend was brave enough to circle back and say, "Remember when you asked me that question this morning, I was kind of caught off guard. I think I can do a better job for you."
Hmm. So even if you screw up the first time, you can still go back.
You can go back. And you know what? Your kids will appreciate your honesty.
Mm.
You can even tell your child, you know, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with this because I didn't learn this body science from my parents when I was growing up. But now I know how important it is for you to learn about it. And I want to give you all the information I wish I had when I was your age.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing the best I can.
Which is always good enough. So I'm just curious about, you know, advice that you might have for parents just getting started in this. And, you know, I started learning about this several months ago and, you know, realized that I needed to be using proper terminology and started saying the word vulva when I was cleaning it in the bath. And
good for you.
And, thank you. And I recognized that it was absolutely ridiculous how uncomfortable I felt saying that word. So I kept saying it and now it's just normal. And I'm going to totally embarrass my husband by saying this, but last night I heard him washing my daughter and he said it too,
awesome.
Which I haven't heard him say before.
It just takes practice,
yeah.
Right?
So, you know, are there other things like that, that it's like, oh my God, I don't think I can do this. You know, are there other kind of tricks and tips and things that I should keep in mind as I'm, you know, moving into this space?
Yeah. And I think, well, just what you said about practicing using the words is key.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more times you say something, the easier it gets.
Yeah.
And even if you got some kids' body science books and read them while your kids were out, out loud to yourself, again, you get used to the language, right? I think it's important for parents not to be too hard on themselves, recognizing that this was not something we grew up with. And so go easy on yourself. And if you don't use that word all the time, that's okay. At least you're using it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And set reasonable goals, right? We need to have a sense of humor about this. Enjoy the mispronunciations and the misuse of words and just have fun with it. There's no reason why it has to be a heavy, daunting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, use opportunities when they come up naturally. You know, parents always tell me that when they're driving in the car is a great time to talk because, you know, their 12-year-old can't escape. And you can talk in the dark and you don't even have to look at them, right? So that would be a good idea to have a snippet of a conversation. Again, doesn't have to be 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
but even 10 minutes, even 2 minutes is valuable. So I would encourage parents to grab those opportunities whenever they come up. You know, maybe it's answering a question while you're walking the dog together. Maybe it's sharing a Facebook post that highlights an issue you think that it would be important for your child to know about. Maybe you're watching a TV show and you pause the PVR every now and then to have a quick conversation about the storyline or the joke that was just made. So we can incorporate these conversations into our daily lives in a way that's not so intimidating and heavy for parents and for kids.
Yeah. It as you said, it doesn't have to be the 2 hour, oh my God, we're going to talk about sex now.
No, just normalizing the conversation by bringing it up when it comes up naturally.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't come up naturally, we still need to bring it up. And the way we can do that with little ones is to introduce it as a bedtime story, you know, with the great resources that are available now.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Salima. I know I've learned a lot and I'm guessing that parents listening have learned a lot as well.
Good. My pleasure.
So just as a reminder, you can purchase the book that Salima co-authored with retired nurse and educator Meg Hickling, and that's called Talk Sex Today, What Kids Need to Know and How Adults Can Teach Them, and it's available on Amazon. And you can find references for all the studies we've mentioned today, as well as the children's books that Salima has mentioned in the course of our conversation at yourparentingmojo.com/sex.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Your Parenting Mojo. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes and sign up for our mailing list at yourparentingmojo.com to receive a free gift. 7 relationship-based strategies to support your children's development while making parenting just a little bit easier on you. For more respectful, research-based parenting ideas to help kids thrive, we'll see you next time on Your Parenting Mojo.